This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Suckin.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
You right there?
Yeah, I am fine, thank you. I'm just very, very cold. I don't know why it's so...
It's blooming freezing.
I know,
here, isn't
and
it?
You know what? I actually walked along the corridor up to the loo just to... I didn't even need to go to the loo, but just to get some circulation going. And it's actually cold out there as well.
Yeah.
Plus it's raining and I've parked miles away next to your car and I haven't got an umbrella.
If you think that's bad, there's an incoming at 3:30 this afternoon, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Which hurricane is it now?
Yeah, big storm incoming from 3:30.
What's
onwards.
It called?
I don't know. Jeff.
Well, we've just... It's in Northern Ireland at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, is it called Dermot then?
But what was the other one called?
Particularly bleak weather forecast.
We've just had another one, though, haven't we? What have we just survived?
Arwen.
And now we've got another one.
And Scott, I was in Edinburgh on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, just gone.
Oh.
And there's massive parts of Scotland that are still without electricity.
I know. Poor people. It's disgusting.
The contractors were staying in the B&B that we were in and they were sort of off out at early doors and coming back sort of quite late in the evening. They're desperately trying to get their electricity.
Yeah, it's wrong. Can you imagine, though, just being freezing and cold?
Not exactly. Up there it was bitter.
And there was a lady having to chop up her furniture in order to I mean, that's just barbaric, isn't it?
Yeah.
Surely someone could have helped her and got some wood or something.
Welcome to net zero.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had a tweet from DG East.
Again?
Yeah.
What are they saying?
Well, here we go. How about a shout-out for a show sponsor suffering from the greed of regulators?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fees for this year have suddenly risen 115%, right? And they're proposing another increase next year of another 190%. That's outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, this is. And why are they doing it? What are they just not thinking? Or do they hate small businesses? What is it?
They hate small businesses.
But why do they?
Because we're all independent and we can't be controlled. It's like herding cats.
We pay tax.
Yeah, but we're way past tax as a way of the government having money anymore, aren't they? They just borrow it.
Well, I will repeat what I've said, that it was the small businesses that kept us all going through lockdowns.
Of course it is. But, you know, if you look at the history of what politicians have been doing, the amount of regulations, things like IR35, chargeback loan, the 3 million excluded. If you look, it's all targeted at small business owners.
And we've said this before as well, at risk of parroting, very few MPs have ever run a small business.
Yeah.
Very few MPs have actually ever worked in business.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's what I meant. Yeah.
It's why I was such a fan of Kelly Tolhurst when she was small business minister, because she had genuinely, and still does, runs a small business. And she knew her stuff. But, of course, they moved her on to other things.
The Music Man project, this is a Christmas project with the City of Rochester Symphony Orchestra. So this is Tracy Ferguson's Neck of the Woods at Tazey 64, I think, if I can remember now. Wednesday the 8th of December, so that is mañana, isn't it?
Tomorrow.
It is.
That's mañana at 7 p.m. It's at the Glassbox Theatre, Mid-Kent College in Chillingham. And the Music Man project, we have mentioned this before, it's a brilliant project. It's an accessible music education service which is creating inspirational opportunities for people with a learning disability to learn, enjoy and perform music together. And since starting in September of 2017, the Kent Medway project has gone from strength to strength and is now the second largest MMP in the UK. Music Man Project, that stands for MMP. Wow. And it's a particular highlight. It was performing at the Royal Albert Hall in 2019 in a show written especially for Music Man Project students from across the UK, where two of the Medway projects were soloists. And so you can find out more by going to themusicmanproject.com. And Sarah Mann, who's the regional director, said, "We're really excited to have the City of Rochester Symphony Orchestra joining us for our Christmas concert this year. We've got a fabulous programme, she says, and we can't wait to perform together. And the musicians overcome extraordinary challenges every day, and part of our mission is to help them show what they can achieve, what they can offer, and what they can teach us all. They're an inspiration. Thank you, Sarah Mann. So there you go, musicmanproject.com.
Fantastic. Do you know what we're going to do now?
Are we going to speak to Linda?
We're going to speak to Linda.
I knew we would at some stage.
Yeah. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah. She's in a little blue.
In her Eluxi shade jumper.
Yeah.
Now, she's got little Jules is now getting the coat on.
Yeah. Well, you need that. Amanda's just messaged me saying the storm has started. I'm assuming that's the weather and not that I've done something wrong again.
Yeah, you've left the kitchen in a pickle.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, I have parked right next to your car.
Right.
And I had my car valeted last week, first time since the pandemic. And had a lovely little man coming round, Paul, hello. And he's took everything out, of course, to valet it. And now I have no umbrella. So I'm not happy. What's the name of the storm, Amanda?
I don't know. Amanda, what's the name of the storm? She needs to know the name of the storm. I don't know why. I'm calling it Jeff or something like that.
Well, it'll begin with B, won't it? If the
probably
last one
Brenda.
Was
R. We've only just had one.
Yeah, and, last one was A, so we, I think this
it'll
one will
be
B.
It'll be Brenda.
Brian.
Where we live on the seafront, we've had that north, wicked north-easterly wind, and my curtains in the front were actually billowing, even with the windows closed, because they're very old windows. And my new husband and I were sort of tossing up who would walk the Greyhound, you know. You just have to force yourself to go out there. And even the Greyhound doesn't want to go out there. She's got a coat and everything. She doesn't want to go out.
Don't blame her.
No.
Right, anyway, shall we talk to Linda?
I have come well prepared today in thermal tights, thermal leggings, thermal jumper and a big Eluxi blue one. Because I knew the studio was going to be cool, because you have to keep all of the systems and equipment cool, don't you?
That is very true. Now, listen, Linda, it's lovely to see you.
It's lovely to be back. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I know you've got some exciting plans for your business that you're going to share with us about how you're developing and growing along, and we really want to hear from that. But just for those that don't know, just give people a quick overview of Eluxi Consulting and what it's about.
Yes, thank you. Well, for those who don't know me, I have got a background in management consulting, so I did spend a substantial portion of my life travelling around the globe consulting to corporate organisations. I've lived and worked on three different continents, essentially delivering productivity improvement programmes, right, which encompassed not just sort of leadership management development, not just soft skills training, but very much the systematization, procedures, processes. And you have to bring the two together in order to get the whole company, you know, working in sure, full alignment. So that's my sort of background. I've worked in over 70 industries internationally. And I chose, when we came back to the UK in 2003, I did sort of go underground for a while the kids were at school. But in 2014, I decided to go back to my core skill set and set up Eluxi. Right. So Eluxi Consulting essentially works with the ambitious business owners out there to optimise the productivity in the business, and that is very poorly understood what productivity actually is, to maximise the profitability. So we work and consult to the businesses to identify how their existing resources can be working so much better to possibly get more volume out of the door, not advising on capital expenditure or growing the staff base unless the volumes dictate that you need to bring on more sure, human resource. And so, yeah, a lot of what we've been developing over the last, actually, I've been developing it over the last 12 months, but unfortunately I've not been able to put it into practice because the government keep locking me down in my house.
Exactly.
And there's only so much that in this type of consulting, there's only so much that I can do, you know, virtually through video conferencing. It is very much, you know, it's quite an in-depth intervention in the client's business. But the end result, I mean, the clients would come out of the process with a much more robust business that's going to be hopefully more self-managing, so that they can then find the time to work on the business and grow it to the levels that they've always aspired to.
Right.
So that's a little bit of a background.
Cool. Sorry, someone's just sent me a message. Gemma Fairclough Haynes has just said it's Storm Bearer. is what it's called.
It sounds
Barra.
Like, yeah,
Barra,
B-A-R-A.
Yeah, I tried to reply, and Twitter says you can't reply to this.
Really?
Oh, no,
I retweeted
why.
There's nothing left to say. It's
I think Barra. She deleted one, and so there's a second one.
I was right, it starts with
Yeah, it's B-A-R-R-A.
Right, okay.
And I said it can Barra off, B-A-R-R-A, right. And then, funny enough, it was the correct spelling.
Oh, and Amanda's been on now and says it's Barra.
So we're in agreement.
We're in agreement. All of our
Barra off, as far as I'm concerned.
All of our listeners agree we're in the middle of Storm Barra outside, while we're nice and secure inside listening to Linda. So coming back to what you were saying, Linda, I know how passionate you are about productivity and organisation and systems and stuff like that, and how frustrated you can get with some organisations that really don't really get it at all.
I had a major confrontation with the poor soul at Alamo Car Rentals on Friday night, whose credit their handheld just refused point blank to accept credit cards, and their systems were just a nightmare. So yes, I'm quite passionate, and I'm not an easy client, put it that way.
but I think, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about that just for a moment, because I've made mention to this quite often on the show. As someone who's spent over 50 years working in technology, I really worry about technology these days.
Yeah.
And about how we implement it so badly, where there's no human intervention when something goes wrong with it. And that is entirely down to poor processes.
Yep.
Yeah. When you design the process, you need to
think of the customer.
Yeah, well, you need to design something into it that says, what if this goes wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think it's a problem of lack of training. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's such an old adage that so many companies will build huge digital, digital systems into their businesses.
Spending lots of money.
Yeah, and the staff have not been properly trained in how to use it. And that is hard, you know, for me, that's 80% of the equation. I mean, I work on the basis that any intervention, and where I come from, it's systems plus the sort of mindset. I could probably sit down with the key managers or the key owner in the business and design the systems in a relatively short space of time, days, weeks. But if they want those systems to actually work, 90% of the effort is in embedding that. Or first of all, if you involve the staff in designing and developing the processes that you then want your IT systems to achieve, that's half the, you know, the nut cracked. Then to involve them in the development and then make sure that everybody is trained in the system before it goes live, she says with her sarcastic tongue in cheek.
And,
you know, do lots of beta testing in the background, then you're far more likely to make that system successful in the business, and the staff are going to be engaged with it. And part of that training process needs to be telling the staff why it's going to benefit their jobs, how it's going to make the client journey better and the whole client experience better. But that, I feel, is one of the key things that's generally lacking in new system installation.
And by involving the staff, they also, because they're on the front line, they will know the little things that they need to help as well.
That's the thing that drives me the most nuts about these stuff, is the people that know, the people on the front line, are the ones that are normally ignored or not asked in the first place.
Exactly. But that's where, you know, the part of the process that I involve in my clients' organisations is bringing in the key, I don't want to call them stakeholders because that implies sort of shareholders and owners. It's not, but the stakeholders in the business are anybody who is driving your business delivery through to, you know, from beginning to end. You know, if you're a company of 100 people, you can't always, you know, include everybody's opinions, but, you know, a short round table get together will bring everybody's ideas and things to the table. That engagement process is absolutely critical, and that's where I feel a lot of companies fall down.
I agree entirely, and it continually amazes me how people want to do everything top down and then wonder why it doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's an interesting phrase, actually, because I use a process of top down, bottom up, i.e. we develop and design the overall objectives and goals and then gradually present that from the top of the organisation down to the bottom, which doesn't have to be, you know, if there's only five of you, then it's easy. If there's 10 of you, it starts to get a little bit more complex and you've got more sort of communication barriers. But you present downwards and then you actually do the work, develop the ideas, get into the detail on the front line, and then start to build that into diagnoses, developments and solutions and take that back up and start to get it ratified. And yet that would work. No, that wouldn't work. You know, obviously business owners have a slightly different picture to how the business needs to work than people on the front line. But that doesn't make those sort of frontline workers' opinions any less valuable. Mm. But it's then starting to put it into context as to what would be the most useful thing in the business. But yeah, that's more processes and procedures. When I talk about systems, I'm not an IT specialist. I do have a number of associates who can automate a lot of the information and management information flows that we identify as being needed in the client business. And that is entirely up to the client if they want to do that. I mean, not everybody wants to work off spreadsheets, but very often if they have no other option, you know, I will say, I don't care if it's done on paper and pencil, you need the right information to get to the right people at the right time so that you can take informed decisions as to how your business is doing to then decide which direction or what type of decisions you need to be making to ensure that you achieve or as close as you can get to your objectives. And that is very often what is lacking is management information. Stats, data, you know, especially like sales departments and marketing departments are full of numbers, but it's what are you actually doing with that information to determine if you can do things better, increase your productivity, increase your output. It's very often since starting up in 2014, Lux, I was incorporated 2015. I've worked in over 120 Kent businesses now.
Wow. Okay.
Not always in any great depth, but the clients that I have spoken to and worked with, the key issue is normally at the operational side. Yeah. And one of the biggest issues with starting up and running, especially in the early years, the business is the business owner has to be so involved on the front line. Normally on the sales and marketing approach, because you've got to start to build that momentum, that they start to easily get drawn into that and forget about getting the operations side and the delivery side of the business really operating effectively and efficiently.
Sure.
And so that's where at the start of 2021, I had sort of sat back and re-looked completely at the product offering that Aloxi has done over the years and recognised ways that we can actually improve the programs that I can deliver, very much focused on getting the business owner in a better place. And the two programs that I know, one of the ones that you wanted to talk about was the Business DNA Open Course.
Yeah.
That is designed really for the much smaller businesses. If it is a business owner, they might have two or three, not necessarily employees, but they might be outsourcing a lot of their their functions. It's those business owners who need to get released from that day-to-day minutiae and the details of the operations, and you've got to start spending time working on your business. And the other factor that came into the design of the Business DNA Open Course is the fact that most training programs or business programs out there are focused on leadership and management, more the soft skills, how to handle people, which I'm not slagging off at all. That is all needed. But what the business owner needs to have is practical understanding of how a business needs to operate. And that is where the systematization, is that even a word in English?
Yes, it is.
Systematization is key. And there was actually, I tweeted out a quick quote this morning that you instantly retweeted, and it was absolute coincidence. I was checking out an Harvard Business Review article. I don't recommend them, they're quite heavy going. But this particular quote absolutely grabbed me. It's from James Clear. He's written a book called Atomic Habits, and he said, "You do not rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems." And that absolutely clinched it to me. So the Business DNA Open Course, I am giving the business owners or the leaders the fundamental essentials of what is a system, what is a management control, how can you design and build that into your business so that does become the DNA, the foundations of how your business will operate. And once you start to get those systems embedded, it makes the business owner's life so much simpler. I it's a bit of a self-managing process, because the business manager and the business leader needs to be just using information to be able to delegate down to other people in the business. And then they've only got the information to determine whether something is going well or something is failing. And it's those sort of meeting points, using that information, that helps you manage your resources, your human resource, and the people that you are relying on to do their jobs, to give you a level of comfort that everything is going well. And if it isn't, you're going to be alerted to that with information. So it all sounds a bit dry, but it's absolutely essential if that business owner is going to then want to just step back one day a week or 4 days a month or a week every year to work on the business or to go on holiday, Paul. Business owners often say, I haven't had a holiday. I mean, this has literally just been a conversation I've had with Mr. Andrews today.
Yeah. Well, I have not been on holiday for
5 years.
But you should go to Florida. You went to Disney World, didn't you?
We went to France the year before last.
I bet he didn't come off his phone or his laptop, though.
No.
So if you've got the systems and the information running in your business, you should be able to take your 2 week break and your 2 week Christmas holiday.
Yep.
Even if it just means dropping into the stats once every week or twice once a day, it's not being on the phone or being on that laptop 8 hours a day. And that is where the Business DNA Open Course delivers all of those tools, the whole Eluxi toolkit.
It's hugely important, actually.
Digestible format.
My radiation levels were very, very high because I spend an awful lot of time on my phone.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, very, very high. And I've just gone back to actually plugging in my ear rather than having Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Because I do tend to prance about on my phone all the time with Bluetooth in. I've gone back to the old plug-in ones.
Yep. Get off your phones, get off your laptops, get the information you need.
Yeah.
But do you want a bit of an overview of the...
Yeah, no, go for it, yeah.
I'm processing
what you've been saying, and I hear very much about what you've been saying about processes and how they work. For me, I just kind of defending myself a little bit when you tell me about getting a holiday. If it was just my internal processes, then I'd beat myself up. But my internal process is pretty good. What causes me stress is external things, people that come at me, like the government.
Absolutely.
Things that happen that mean you have to go and reassess something.
Everybody's going to have their own personal things that are going on, and if all that white noise around you that does completely distract you from the main goals of your business, which is hopefully, in most people's cases, it's either to be achieving their financial aspirations or achieving a work-life balance, where they don't feel that they a lot of us are now unemployable, we much prefer running our own business. There's a lot of external forces, but I do have an answer, well, not an answer, but I have an argument that you can only stress out about the things that you can influence.
Yeah.
There are things out there that you're never going to be able to influence, so you need to understand what the risks are, what the impact are on your business, and mitigate for those inside the organisation. That would be my argument.
Absolutely.
There's no point stressing the stuff that you can't have any effect over.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I agree.
But I'm not a counsellor. I will hate that.
Can we lie down on a couch, Linda?
Yeah, I do call it the consultant's couch occasionally because I need to understand the client's pain points and your agony curve so that I can help you understand how we can get you through all of that.
I've got one of those. I like that, an agony curve. Yeah. I've got an agony curve.
I've got a very good agony curve. But, agony is a perception as well. And it's taken away that sense that these are things that you can't control. Yeah, there are things you can't control, so don't try to.
Yeah.
But focus on the things you can control and make sure that if those things you are in control of, you are doing the best to your business's ability. I'm not going to say to your ability, because you have to trust in your business and the people that you decide to bring on into your business, whether they're employed or outsourced resource. And that's where most business owners, the smaller companies, like I'm talking maybe less than 10 employees, really do struggle to break through those first few years, because they cannot get out of that vicious circle of still trying to do everything themselves.
Yeah.
And delegation and management is an art in itself and a science. So the open course, I've designed it for those businesses who haven't probably got the budget to have me coming in on a more frequent basis. And I've designed it as an intensive group program. So we have 6 workshops, an afternoon's workshop, and that's delivered over 13 weeks. So they're not weekly, for the very specific reason that at the end of the workshop, you have been given a tool. You've been shown how it can be applied in your business. You then have to go away and start to use that and apply it in the business. So to do that in a week, when you've also got to run the business, can be quite stressful, quite, you know, very short space of time between sessions. So I've decided we'll go for fortnightly sessions. And it's ideal for both the startups and the early years SMEs or the business owners who probably maybe should be establishing their first supervisory or frontline management positions. Haven't yet taken the plunge, maybe, but you need to get your systems, your processes and your procedures in place so that you can keep control of the detail without micromanaging. And micromanagement is another sort of buzzword that, especially since we've gone into this whole remote working, people are scared of, you know, I don't want to be seen to be micromanaging.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's bad management, basically. So anybody, the delegates coming onto the course, you'd be joining a small group of business owners. So I only have up to 12 people on the course because we want to open up dialogue. And I think it's also good for, because some people come in and perceiving that I can't do that in my business. That doesn't apply in my business. And when you actually hear other people's experiences, it opens up to the possibilities that, yeah, maybe I could do that in my business. So it's quite a bit of a masterminding process in that respect.
Yeah.
And we then sort of work through over the 13 sessions how to design your own self-managing organisation. So I'm delivering you the fundamentals that you require to be less hands-on with day-to-day operations. And that then starts, we can help you start to free up the time and find your, I call it your sacred time, to be strategic, do the strategy and the forward-thinking stuff and work on those higher level projects that are going to get your scale up and your business growth. So I'd be guiding you to develop all of those unique, what I call the genetic code that is specific to your own organisation. So it's very tailored. So throughout that program, you will be developing your business DNA, the foundations of your operating practices so that you are consistently delivering on time, on budget, with the right level of resource. And very often that's where businesses start to erode their profits.
Yep.
If you're not managing your staff well enough, you start throwing people at problems.
Yep.
And that's when your businesses starts to have too much resource in the business. Yep. And that's where I start to help people understand what productivity is and identifying if your staff are not being productive.
I think just on that topic, I think if there's any positives at all, and there's not many, out of the lockdowns, out of the lockdowns and everything, one of the things that quite a few businesses have seen is how much they've wasted. You know, so their overheads are quite high,
yeah.
And when the whole rationale is taken away, and they're sat there with all these overheads, thinking, "My God, you know, I've got all this overhead, and it doesn't even produce anything." So that's been an eye-opener.
I think,
for
the infrastructure and office space and desk, not, you know, operating stations, et cetera, et cetera. I do agree. I've got my own thoughts and feelings as to how remote workers need to be managed differently to what they would be in the office.
Well, give us a nugget of that then.
Well, going back to that term micromanaging, you can't just leave people to get on with it, especially if they're working from home. The tables turn a little bit insofar as when they're working from home, you need to be putting in mechanisms to help people feel more engaged and knowing that the business is still out there. You know, when you're in the office and you can hear things going on around you, you're seeing people going in and out.
You're having a biscuit and you're having a natter by the water filter.
It gives you that sense that, yes, the business is operating. I'm part of something real. When you're working from home, you've lost that connection. And that's where management and business owners need to be more engaged on a more detailed basis, which sounds scary, but even if it's just making sure that everybody has at least a one-to-one with you or their direct line manager once a week for an hour, that is all part of management time that has to be nurtured and developed. What actually happens in that 1 hour's one-to-one is another, it's a whole other design process, because it has to work both ways. You know, the managers want to get feedback from the employees. The employees want to feel that they're, you know, needed and loved and all of those lovely soft things by the employee, the employer. Also, when people are working from home, if you have not had systems already in your business, because you've been able to just put your head round the door or pop into the open plan area and see what everybody's doing, you need to now have information to determine, are people getting the work done or not? And that's where your softwares, your online platforms, as to how are you planning the work, how are people reporting back on it, how are you actually determining what's been done, what hasn't been done. And if anything, that starts to get more highlighted when you've got people working remotely than when they're in the office. But I think it also, that could be a positive in the longer run, because I've seen it all too often that many business owners and managers work and manage based on gut feel and perception because they don't have management information to give them the facts and figures. So I have the, you know, the mantra that managing has to be objective, fair and factual. You can't be objective and you can't be factual if you don't have information. You can't rely on your gut feel and perception as to what's going on in the work environment. I think there are, you know, there are positives to remote working if you get your management information systems in place so that you can make sure that things are still on track.
I think for people, just cutting out long commutes and stuff has been an eye-opener.
Absolutely.
I know people that have lost weight during lockdown because they're not commuting. You know, they're able to exercise in that time.
Did you see that report by City AM this morning?
No.
They did a survey. 1.3 million London-based workers have said that they intend to quit their job after Christmas because they will not commute.
I've got my brother's partner, also working in the travel industry, had worked at home for 2 years, and their company had, you know, totally confirmed, there's been no drop in performance, no drop in your productivity. In fact, you've probably done more than you would normally do in the office. But when they've asked to go to a three, they want to work from home. Employer completely refused point blank.
Really?
No, you've got to come back into the office.
I'm surprised because I know that my son, who was with Softcat, he's now with Strike, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Or Stripe, I always forget. Stripe. He was with Softcat as a graduate, and they were amazing with working from home. They sent him chairs, you know, standing desk, everything like that. And Strike, the same. They've given him, you know, everything that he needs to work from home. He's rented now a 2-bedroom flat rather than one
for the office,
so he's got an office, and they swap. One works on the kitchen table and one works in the bedroom.
But no, you're absolutely right in terms of the work-life balance. If people have been used to commuting even like just an hour, you know, which some people think is not, doesn't even count as commuting, but that's 2 hours a day, that's 10 hours a week.
But it's walking to the station, it's waiting for the train or waiting for the bus,
that in between
getting
stuff.
Wet, you know.
I think there's going to be another decade of fallout from this in terms of things, you know, the dust will settle and it's going to be an interesting to see how things pan out over the next 5 to 10 years.
Look at house prices going up in Wales, for example, where people are moving from London because they can work
out into the country.
Exactly.
Well, there was a very controversial piece from the BBC News. I think pinged it out the week before last. The government are now considering making it illegal for companies to be trying to get in contact with their staff out of their working hours, which is, it is a controversial thing. Should it be illegal or not? Should it be regulated? Possibly. My fundamental belief is that if you are contacting your staff out of hours and like people are having to be available 12, 14, 16 hours a day, that is a sign of just poor management, weak management. That means that the business owner probably is not in control, and there are ways and means to get you back in control so that you don't need to be contacting your staff. And again, if they're contacting staff, you know, so regularly, I mean, I know it's like a bit of a balance as to what constitutes always contacting staff out of hours. And it takes a certain level of courage for staff to literally switch off when they've finished their working day and not accept calls or constantly.
It's worth having two phones. It is actually worth having a work phone and a person. And you don't see that much, do you?
No, I used to have the same thing when I was still an employee.
Does it exist, the technology, to have an iPhone or whatever phone that you can switch on to? I know you can switch it on to silent, but to switch on to personal or business?
Yeah, there are phones out there. I had a dual SIM phone. It wasn't a smartphone. And yes, you could do that.
So it's 6 o'clock, you could swap. Because also,
You don't have to be carrying two devices.
Yeah, but I get calls sometimes and I'm out drinking or, you know, and then you'll think, oh, I'll just answer this, you know. And my new husband gets calls from all over the world. You know, we get calls on Boxing Day and that because people are not celebrating Boxing Day.
Yeah. That's where, you know, as a business owner myself, you can manage that situation without appearing to be uncontactable to your clients, which is a slightly different relationship to employer-employee. But, you know, employees, a business owner and the managers should not perceive that they should be available 24/7, 365. And that's where I felt, so this article was quite controversial. I personally don't believe it should be law. I think business owners need to find ways to manage how and when they need to be in contact with their employees, which is all part of the how to manage yourself before you can manage other people part of the course.
Well, you know,
probably putting everybody off now.
I just want to say with that, because I would be fundamentally against that. I get things like a few weeks ago, 10 o'clock at night, I get a phone call. Your burglar alarm's going off. So I have to call my manager that lives locally because I don't even have access to the alarm.
Yeah, that's a slightly different situation. Yeah, there's contingencies in place, isn't it? And that's a security and emergency backup thing.
Yeah, but you could imagine if they passed the law saying you're not allowed to do that, some idiot would then go to a tribunal and go, he made me come and turn the burglar alarm off.
Exactly, but that's where, you know, the laws would then have to specify, you know, rationale, et cetera, et cetera. But,
Linda, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for that. We're kind of fast running out of time. We're almost at the end of the show. Just give us a shout out. If people want to find out more about the DNA courses and the other things you do and can book themselves on it, what's the best way to do that?
Yep. My programmes are all up on my website, which is alluxi.co.uk. Alluxi is A-L-L-U-X-I. Just go to programmes and there's the Business DNA Open course there. You're very welcome to email me, linda@alluxi.co.uk, and I can send you over more details about that DNA Open course. The next one is I'm recruiting or generating expressions of interest to join the January course. There is also another one in May, and then I normally do one in September, all the doldrum months, as I call it, when you haven't got the excuse of, oh, it's going to be Easter or the summer holidays or Christmas. So I start them in sort of very specific timeframes, but it's a 13-week program. You will go away with the whole Alluxi toolbox, business models, templates and frameworks, and 18 hours towards your continuous professional development, but that's not the key bonus. So, yeah, linda@alluxi.co.uk. I'd be more than pleased to chat with people about the course coming up.
Fantastic. There are links to that website and Linda's website on the Kent Business Radio website. And they will stay there forever. So if you didn't get a chance to write that down, you can find them there on Kent Business Radio. For the moment, Linda Garcia of Alluxi Consulting, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your mate Casey Canine's been on.
Yes, well, missing Darcy, of course.
Please, can you give a shout out to an insomniac greyhound who is waking up at 3:30 a.m. every morning? I think I'm pining for Darcy.
I wonder whether, of course, he's keeping his owner up as well. So, you know, that's tough, isn't it, when they wake up 3 a.m. or 3:30 a.m.
Amanda Flanders says, it was the fabulous Linda at Alluxi Consultants who gave me the love of spreadsheets.
And time tracking.
Yeah. The Kent Foundation, great show to Dave, and we have so much great advice from Linda at Alluxi Consultants.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to catch up with some of the things that have come in. Can you see anything that's come in as well?
Hold on. Not at the moment. Shall I read something while you look?
No, because I want to do the uninterrupted.
Okay.
FSB
News. FSB News coming up.
Yeah.
Let's find out what's going on.
Yeah.
You're listening to Channel Radio. The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
The FSB has launched a wellbeing benefits designed for small business owners and the self-employed. When you're working for yourself, looking after your wellbeing is crucial to the success of your business. Access a wide range of wellbeing resources and services that would normally only be available to employees of large businesses, including 24/7 telephone and online GP and unlimited telephone counselling for members and their families, virtual physio, discounted health cash plans and insurances, advice and much, much more. You can find out by going to the website www.fsb.org.uk and then going to the Wellbeing Hub. So do check that out. Firms across Kent and Medway can now apply for interest-free loans of up to £500,000 to help the county's economic recovery. Kent County Council is offering a total of £8 million to help small and medium-sized firms develop new lines and services, invest in machinery and premises, and create more jobs. The Kent and Medway Business Fund will offer loans of between £100,000 to £500,000, and funding for the loans comes from the repayment of previous KCC loans under a similar scheme from 2017. If you want to find out about it, www.kent.gov.uk/businessloans and funding. That's kent.gov.uk/businessloans and funding. Entries are now open for the Celebrating Small Business Awards. We're celebrating the achievements, successes and resilience of small businesses and the self-employed across the UK, and you're invited. Whether you're shortlisted for one of 12 local awards or make it all the way through to the spectacular UK final, it's time to put your business in the spotlight and show us what you're made of. It's free to enter, so what are you waiting for? Go to www.fsbawards.co.uk. Right, I'm now going to read a number of workshops, meetups and webinars, and at the end of all of these I'll give you the link where you can go and find out more and book your place, and I do believe all of them are free to attend.
Good.
Big Small Business Networking. On December the 15th, something very special is taking place. The largest small business networking event in the FSB's history ever. If you would like to network with hundreds of small businesses from across the UK, why not join us? On Manana, tomorrow, Wednesday the 8th of December at 9:30 a.m, free COVID business support programmes for Kent, East Sussex and Essex. The South East Local Enterprise Partnership are investing in a free COVID business support programme, starting and succeeding in business and adapting with digital for businesses in Kent, East Sussex and Essex, which is delivered by WSX Enterprise. WSX will let FSB members across the region know how they can access this support, as well as this grant on offer through the South East Local Enterprise Partnership. Also manana tomorrow, Wednesday the 8th of December, 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m, Maximise Your Membership event. On Thursday the 9th of December, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m, Post-Pandemic Opportunities for Small Businesses. And then moving into January, we've got Kent Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking, Tuesday the 11th of January, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Thursday the 13th of January, Property and Construction event, Making Your Projects Run Smoothly. This is hosted by Peter Searle, and it's part of a series to be held on a bi-monthly basis. This event's topic from Peter is three steps to winning tenders. The price must be right for everybody. And Peter will be joined by James Sargent, who's senior associate from Quigg Golden. That's Thursday the 13th of January. Also on the same day at 10 a.m, Thursday the 13th of January, Overcoming Fear and Doubt in Business. On the Wednesday the 19th of January, Networking, Let's Talk Technical for Engineering, Manufacturing and Transport Sectors. That's Wednesday the 19th of January, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Wednesday the 26th of January, Transition to Net Zero with the Zero Carbon Business Portal, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then 27th of January, How to Secure and Manage PR for Your Business, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Every single one of those workshops, webinars, meetups, and everything else can be found by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB. And there's a complete listing of all the events with all the details and a link to book your place. So do check that out. And that is the FSB news for this week.
How beautifully read, Paul Andrews. There's a last chance to claim your free ticket to the Marsh Network Online Christmas meeting, which is manana. And it will be, how do you claim it? Let's have a look. You can email terry@botfield.net. That's B-O-T and then field.net. Confirming you'll attend, and he'll book you in, he says. If you want to book as normal and pay the £5 fee, you can book at marshnetwork.co.uk. And their speaker will be Alison Gordon from the Computer People, talking all about Ali. Is that A-L-I?
Yep.
What's Ali?
Her name.
I was thinking about AI, you know, because I've been watching Robots, of course. Humans on Netflix. Anybody else watched Humans on Netflix?
No.
Oh, it's very scary.
Ali, artificial live intelligence.
That's what I was thinking. So she's talking all about herself.
I see what you did there. That's clever.
This is a bit worrying, though, Paul Andrews. Virtual mince pies.
That doesn't work
for me.
That means bring your own.
Yeah, exactly. BYI. And it would be great if you could don Christmas attire and bring your coffee and actual mince pies with you.
Christmas jumpers.
Yeah. Be prepared to tell us all about your business. And for a Christmas quiz, try this one. Name four of Santa's reindeer. Go on then, Linda.
Vixen, Blixen, Dancer.
Rudolph.
That would have been the obvious
one.
Yeah,
the only one I know is Rudolph. Dancer, maybe. Or Prancer, isn't there? Or something.
Prancer.
How are we supposed to know them anyway? How do we know?
This is a quiz night one.
So that's from Terry, and it's, as I said, mañana. It's at 10:30 a.m. It's the final one of the year, people, so go and support them.
Terry Thorpe has been on. How about a shout out for someone being kept awake by a love-struck greyhound?
And the charity of the year for the mental health resource, let's have a look at this. This is from Tom Chown, and it's they say, as part of our corporate social responsibility commitment, we have decided to show our support for West Kent Charity, which is the mental health resource, volunteering our services to produce this film, which is entitled Supporting Mental Wellbeing in Kent. They're based in Tunbridge Wells, where all the Chinese from Hong Kong are moving, apparently, buying up properties. Mental health resource supports people with complex and enduring mental health conditions, delivering various advocacy and support groups all for free. It's been filmed on location at East Sussex Beaches and in central Tunbridge Wells, and the film features three clients who were happy to talk about how the charity has helped them. It's going to be distributed online and across social to help raise awareness of mental health resource fundraising, and marketing manager Jenny Williams has said. So you can go to find out more. I think go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk. There is a little phone number, which I'll read in a minute if you get your pen. And there's an email, which is tom@digitom.tv. And Tom Chown, Chown, is on 01-892-520-697. There you go.
Fantastic. We did mention this last week, but I want to give it another mention. The Archbishop's Palace in Maidstone are now open for expressions of interest. Could this be your next venture or venue? Mm. Don't miss this unique opportunity to be part of the future for this stunning Grade 1 listed building. With a fascinating history dating back to the 14th century, it deserves pride of place in the county town of Kent. Maidstone Borough Council is seeking tenders from suitably qualified and experienced parties interested in submitting proposals for the alternative use of the Archbishop's Palace. Interest is expected from operators, developers, contractors, consultants, funders, business owners, event managers and organisers and the like, experienced in operating wedding conference centres and or multi-use buildings incorporating events, weddings, cultural and public spaces. The council wishes to appoint a suitably experienced company to work in partnership with on this project. If you want to find out more, go to kentbusinessportal.org.uk.
I used to have clarinet lessons in that building.
Did you?
Didn't that used to be part of the Kent Music School?
It did once upon a time, yeah.
There you go.
It's been lots
beautiful place.
It's been lots of different things. It's a fabulous building. It's incredibly old.
Yeah.
It's right there on the river. The issues with it are it's incredibly old, and it's a Grade 1 listed building, so pulling it about is not the easiest thing in the world to do. You don't want to pull it about too much because it's a beautiful, beautiful building.
A bit of sympathetic restoration.
Yeah, I looked at it 2 years ago when they first started looking at this. So I was invited for a tour around and just basically talking to the council about what they thought might happen, because one of the things they were thinking about back then was making it like a co-working space.
Yeah.
The problem is it's very bitty. There's no big open plan spaces. There's just lots of little cubby holes and
can't
staircases.
Can't you knock through, though, and stuff?
Well, that's what I just said. No, you can't knock it about.
Sorry, I was talking about
they're
donuts.
They're going to need to get some concessions on their grade and listing. Yeah.
But you can do inside.
Useful.
Yeah, aren't you allowed inside to knock through?
No. But you've got to see this place. It is a medieval building. It really is. Mm. It's stunningly beautiful, and there's massive fireplaces and all kinds of
things. I think I might go and have a look.
Yeah. It has been used as a wedding venue for many years by the council, and it works. The other thing that might pull it off, except that there's not enough space there, so I don't think it probably would.
And parking.
Yeah, is that it could be a boutique hotel, but it wouldn't be very big, and you'd have to charge an awful lot of money per room to make it viable, which is probably not.
Well, look at the pig. I was looking at the pig in just outside Canterbury. I was going to take the new husband. And the rooms are like 300 and something, 360 a night.
Yeah.
Blimey, you know, I'd rather stay at home than have champagne.
Any hotel that's got boutique in the word normally means expensive.
Yeah. Exactly. And I love an indie hotel. Yeah. And there are some beautiful ones, but I'm not going to pay 370 a night to pay outside Canterbury, to stay outside Canterbury.
Mm. Absolutely. Have you got anything else?
I do. How long have I got?
You've got 3 minutes before the end of the show.
Anti-idling signs going
up. Anti-who?
Anti-idling. They've been listening to me. Oh, but this is Maidstone. They want to come to Tankerton High Slopes. Mason Borough Council is putting up anti-idling signs around the borough to encourage more people to turn their engines off if they are stationary. Linda, they sit outside my house for hours with their engine.
The cars these days, mine does it automatically.
Yeah, but we get old codgers, and they and you can literally smell the fumes in our house. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah,
I think that's why they moved to making cars do it automatically.
But they come in the summer and they sit and eat in their car and don't even waddle out to a bench in lovely weather or open a window. Anyway, the signs will be mostly positioned near to schools, as it has been found these areas can get the most polluted when parents leave their engines running. In my day, we used to cycle our kids to school or walk them.
Yeah.
Councillor Paul Cooper, Chairman of Strategic Planning and Infrastructure at Maidstone Borough Council, said air quality around the borough has improved since lockdown. Thanks for that. And we really would like to maintain this. To do this, we're using these signs as a reminder that if people are waiting in their cars for more than a minute or two, please turn their engine off, especially near sensitive areas. Engine idling, I was looking on the RAC, actually does more harm than driving. So the initiative is part of the low emissions strategy. I might take a picture of this and send it to Canterbury Council.
Yeah. To you. Right, we've reached the end of another show.
Went very quickly.
It did. But what a lot of fun it was. Yeah. So I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors, the lovely folks at DG East Vehicle Services, to my two guests, Mr. Keith Mabbott of Street Soccer Foundation, Linda Garcia of Aluxite Consulting.
Thank you.
My stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin.
In a fur coat. Not real fur, of course.
All fur coat and no knickers.
Yeah. And Linda in her gorgeous jumper.
Yeah. There's no extra show on this Thursday, I'm afraid, but we'll be back with an extra show the week after that. We'll be back next Tuesday with another Business Bunker show. We'll see you all then. Have a fantastic week. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.